Live from the Mountain West Conference Media Day at Circa Las Vegas, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Yep, welcome in Reno. This hour is brought to you by Battleborne Injury Lawyer, 766-1400. The call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. Make sure you dial 775 on the north. It's Cofield. It's Adam Hill. The master of radio disaster, the sultan of sarcasm, Mike Palm from Circa is here with us. Huh? It's not bad, right? I don't have a third little idiom to bring up, but
first of all, let's be honest here. I was told Alex White was your co-host today, so this is a lot of bait and switch. A lot of bait and switch here.
Definitely a downgrade, no question.
Even JVT I could have dealt with.
but Adam Hill.
Adam Hill starred in the summer of Paulie on VSiN, for those that don't remember. But
we heard all about it many times. And you're still making the recommendation that he's on board at some point.
We all have. I think we've all made the recommendation. At this point, it's just apathy.
Okay, your excitement level for Mountain West Conference football this year?
Well, the Boise Invitational, as we call it, right?
You think?
Well, the Boise team is worse than they were last year, and yet they're a bigger favorite to win the league. So I think maybe the league's down a bit. Maybe the league's down a bit. I don't know.
Bigger favorite, you're saying, on the boards here?
Yeah. Okay. I mean, last year they were $1.25. I see the $1.35, $1.40 now to win the league. And you're replacing the second-place finisher in the Heisman race last year. So you would think maybe there's some shoes to fill.
But, that was pretty good.
Yeah, he was all right. We'll get to see him here still in Las Vegas. That's the good news.
Here's the thing. Running backs don't matter.
In college football?
Maybe
in the Big 12. Come on. Come on. They do still matter.
Running success is it's a product of offensive line play and scheme more than it is running back talent.
I'm not going to argue with you there, but he was still awfully productive.
He's very good.
An awfully productive guy and got them to the college football playoffs where they laid an egg. But I will tell you this. We got to spend time with Spencer Danielson last year. We flew up there to Boise. B.J. Raines. You know B.J. Raines?
Sure, yeah.
Grand Canyon gets admitted early to the Mountain West, and the story I read on ESPN says, B.J. Raines, a spokesman for the university, says it's not only unethical but unconstitutional. What world are we living in here? I don't know what's going on.
Anyhow, he still here?
They flew us up.
Is
no,
that inaccurate?
The table's empty.
Wait, is that inaccurate?
Yeah, it was on the ESPN story when you read about Grand Canyon's early admittance. The university commented through B.J. Raines.
I think what Steve is saying is it was an accurate description of his role.
I guess he's the associate AD now. There's Stormy. She got her start here. Stormy Bonatoni. When's ESPN going to make her the number one hockey person?
I mean, not absurd?
It's absurd. Emily Kaplan's a writer. She can't ask a question. The draft was a joke, only upstaged by the Major League Baseball draft that had no players there. I mean, what is going on here?
Why are we judging all writers by one writer? Writers can ask questions sometimes.
Can they? Kaplan is a nice writer, but she's not a sideline reporter, and Stormy is the very best. I don't know what it takes, but ESPN's got to make her their number one ringside reporter.
I am not critiquing my friend Emily. What I'm saying is don't say just if you don't think she can ask a question that no writer can ask a question.
No, what I'm trying to do is not sound negative about Emily because I love her as a writer. But okay. I think that's not her strong suit. And Leah Hextall, I don't know what her strong suit is. Somebody should have bought her a wardrobe for the draft. I mean, that was
playing hockey.
Maybe. Maybe it is. Yeah. Maybe it is. Back to the Mountain West.
Master of radio disaster. That's what I'm talking about right there. Mike Palm. Strays on Kaplan
and
Hextall.
Keep it focused here, Steve. What do you want to know?
It's my fault.
I did not know Leah Hextall would be taking shots.
I was kind of hoping.
Sure. I didn't think when we started this, that's where we were going to go.
Wow. I don't think it's the Mountain West Invitational or the Boise Invitational in the Mountain West. I think there is more balance. I disagree with him. I think the loss of Genty is going to be very debilitating. I don't think it's an automatic that you plug other guys in and you get 2,500 yards rushing.
So who do you like?
That's a great question. That's the problem.
Who's the alternative?
Well, I think UNLV has a good shot. I like San Jose State a lot.
I think UNLV will win a Big 12 title before they win a Mountain West title. That's where I'll say that about that.
So give it. Wait, give us a skinny on this one.
What
do you think is going to happen in the future?
I think Coach Mullen, who you just had on, he's had a lot of offers, right? He's had a lot of offers to come out of those cushy TV gigs. I think that in his mind, he has to have planned that they would get to a conference that's very winnable every year, which is the Big 12. I mean, the Big 12, I mean, the teams that are picked 17th. We're just talking about you, Leah Hextall, and Emily Kapp. No, we are. That's been the whole topic because we saw you.
She's got to be nice to them.
That's been the whole.
My Lord. I also feel like you're tiptoeing a little bit. Did you mean to say Mullen wouldn't have taken this job unless there was big upper mobility like the Big 12, like he expects to be in there at some point?
I do.
Okay.
Well, what do you think he's taking it to stay with these schools and get –
I'm with you.
He's banking on that win in DeKalb to be his catalyst into the playoff.
Cal Davis will be playing good football in the Mountain West in 2029. That's what hooked him.
The only problem with your point about winning a Big 12 title, and I understand the joke there, but they should win next year when Boise's gone and Fresno's gone and everybody's gone. Like, they should win the Mountain West next year.
If they win the Mountain West next year, does that still get them in the playoff?
Possibly
does, but this conference might be – that might not be enough.
They might have
a group of five school.
They might have an opportunity for a monster non-con win next year. That if they get business done, but I can't say who it is.
Oh, but what a tease.
Well,
what
a tease. Well, you tease all the time,
no,
too.
No, I don't tease. I don't tease.
You deliver
facts.
You don't tease. That's a funny thing. You basically told us when it was top secret about the baseball stadium. We're like, oh, what's it going to look like? And you're like, Sydney Opera House.
It is the Sydney Opera House.
I know
House.
It is. But
and they got mad when I said, what do you think of it? I said, well, the Sydney Opera House will be flat. What are you talking about? I said, a child could look at this and think it's the Sydney Opera House.
Who doesn't think it's the Sydney Opera House?
They were very upset. And I said, and where's the ride share? Allegiant already screwed this up. You got to have ride share in Las Vegas.
Wait, did you? Is that what you said?
I did. They're talking about, we got so many parking spots. Nobody needs a parking garage. You need ride share. Anyhow.
Wow.
Anyhow.
Did you iron it out, by the way?
No, I don't know. I don't even shop. I refuse
like,
now to
erase,
shop.
Erase,
I won't even
driveway.
Shop at the Gap now. I'm done with the Gap.
Oh, wow. Wait a second. By the way, I think you're joking there because I did see, God love Derek Stevens. They did that. A groundbreaking, and I turn around, and Derek's, like, shaking everyone's hand. He's like, anything you need down in Circa. I'm like, he doesn't need to do that, and he's out hoofing it.
The funny thing about that groundbreaking was that you had the heads of all the MGM, Caesars Wynn, and all that, and every reporter ran to Derek. I thought that was very telling, right?
The ground faking?
The ground faking.
Oh, stop.
Nah, they're going to be here. They're going to be here. They can't play in that Sacramento. Ask Luis Severino. I think they're going to move. Nobody wants to play there.
Which of those heavy machinery is going to be used to build the...
They'll bring them back out soon. they needed it to look legit.
How long was the rental?
No.
Maybe only a couple of days. That's the problem.
They call that staging. Staging the houses to put the pillows here.
It looked great. All right. Before we run out of time with this fun, because, again, master of radio disaster, Sultan of Sarcasm, Mike Baum is in with us. Contest. Come on now. Let's start.
We're going to kill it.
Tell Vegas about the contest. And Reno.
Don't forget Reno. Yeah. Don't forget Reno. That's an important market. You know, we did a promotion up there. We matched the $250 deposit with Circus Sports, and we got the most signups we ever did in a month, over 60 in June. So that's good. We got some customers in.
More importantly, actually not more importantly, but just as important, who's the worst actor in the in the commercials that you guys do for the contest every year?
Well, it's only Derek and I that is in everyone, right?
No, but I mean, of the cameos, I mean, you've had JVT, you've had Mitch, Paul's been in there, I think Eumann's has
horrible.
Been in there.
Paul's
horrible.
He's so stupid.
it had to be a lot of
takes. We filmed that thing. Oh. The line is, what's the guarantee? He keeps saying how much. Paul! We did like 17 takes for him to say what's the guarantee, and he's sitting there, and we had to keep walking down the slot aisle. He was in one of those pivotal spots. I mean, it's unbelievable.
So him?
He's
the answer?
It's just unbelievable. I mean, if he doesn't find Mitch Moss, he's still with Seat Williams, I think. I mean, it's unbelievable, this guy.
I'll just tell Doug behind the scenes. That right there is a 30-second promo. All right? You don't need to look anymore. If you're listening to the show, that was good. There he is.
He was in Pretty Woman or whatever the thing was, but with Julia Roberts or whatever, Ocean's 11 or whatever. He couldn't get the line. What's the guarantee?
He didn't have a line in that. He was just standing in the background holding a
That's
drink.
True.
Fake
That's
talking.
True.
Yeah.
That's
he
true.
Did like a shrug.
How about when he went one-on-one with Sequoia Holmes, the WNBA player?
He also... He took a carry against the Arena Football League team. I don't know if you ever knew that.
No, I did not know that story.
Yeah. He was running too straight up. He took a big hit.
You got to have a low center of gravity as a running back.
He took a big hit.
Holly.
Yeah.
I have Aaron Oster behind me going, contest, contest.
All right, so.
He's asking for it. Survivor, he's actually on the air right now.
Survivor's off the chain. Okay. I mean, I was worried Grandissimo might take our focus away from the one thing we do good here, which is our Survivor contest. We're up 40% year over year to date. I mean, I think $20 million really in play. We got six for the $100,000 Eagle Play contest that we're doing, Grandissimo, and then we're right about where we're at. We're going to always be right around 6,000 with the millions. But I really hope we get to 20. I mean, this thing's incredible. And every year, the people who come back can't stand they got eliminated and come back and buy more entries. It's a genius contest.
I was just going to say that. The pub you got from NFL Armageddon and the bludgeoning that
97% out in the month of September.
They're like, give me more.
Right?
I want it.
The FOMO is uncontrolled. People, I want to do a midseason Survivor. That was every email, right? No, you got to survive. That's the name of it. What else can we talk about?
I love it. I love it. Absolute gluttons for punishment. The other contest, I feel like you never give it enough love.
The millions?
Yeah, yeah.
There's 126 ways to win. I think that's the key to the whole thing.
All right.
And the genius was putting the quarters in, right? Because I think all of us through a football season can get hot for 4 weeks. And you just got to do it right, you know, time it right within the quarter and pick up a couple hundred thousand.
Okay. Your Hawkeyes this year?
I don't know.
You don't seem enthusiastic.
Well, what? Are they going to win 8 games? They're going to whatever.
Coach is back.
Yeah, so well, that's right. But he doesn't have enough family members on the team with him. The recruiting scandal, what really got to my heart was this whole thing with they recruited the Michigan quarterback and he got suspended for a game. I said, what a shame it would be if this was the mark on Kurt Ferentz's 30-year career of nepotism and non-inclusivity, right? I would hate that to mar his career. I really would. Let's give you. Just
I don't
give
know
you
what that under the breath
I'll
was.
I'll give you some. What the sharp plays are at Circa. Yeah. Everybody loves Clemson. The sharps love Clemson. The sharps love Penn State. That's the two sharp plays so far for college football.
Clemson looks good. Let's really get you in trouble somewhere. What's your least favorite state you guys do business in Circa Sports?
Well, I'm from Iowa. The biggest challenge is Colorado because we don't have a physical presence there, and it's just like all sharp play. Right? We have almost no shot to win in Colorado, but it's not the fault of Colorado.
Yeah.
It's but you know I think there's potential in the other states. It's interesting Illinois with this tax, this 50 cents on the bet, 25 cents, and how companies are handling it. And we were having meetings every day. How are we going to handle it? And I think the route that MGM and Caesars are going is better. Increasing your minimum than just straight taxing the players on it with a fee per bet. But we'll see. We'll see how that all shakes out.
How about Derek coming out strong against the potential changes and siding with Dina Titus?
He had Trump here. What's he complaining about? Why didn't he tell him about it? She's right. It's absolutely right. It got put. But I mean, that's all the comments,
yeah, right?
He goes online. Derek takes stand. You had Trump. You got what you wanted. Everybody comes piling on. Titus is right. That bill will never get to a vote. I'll just tell you right now. Johnson is not going to let something get to a vote that amends the big, beautiful bill. So you got to do it through tax legislation introduced in September.
Griffin back at Lotus plays the music. That's it. How many times you hit the dump button? There's
Zero.
No actual cusses.
Zero. I didn't
cuss. But there's really dangerous stuff.
Really?
Sometimes, yes.
Promoting Stormy? I don't think it's that dangerous.
Stormy walks live. Stop it! Stop it! All right, Mike. We appreciate it. Thanks,
fellas.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Mountain West Conference Media Day on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, for the audience in Reno and in Vegas, we want to hear from Jeff Choate. We just talked to the Wolfpack coach a few minutes ago. Myself and Willie Ramirez, and this part of the conversation we were talking about recruiting and how important it is to get legacy players. Nate Burleson, of course, onto a great TV career, was a pretty good player in the National Football League. Well, he was a member of the Pack, and so is his son, Nate Burleson II. And we talked about just how important it is to get legacy guys.
No, I mean, I think a funny story about Chuba, if I could just give you one real quick here. So when I was the head coach of Montana State, I actually did two home visits for Brock. And Chuba was like this, like, hyperactive kid over in the corner just bouncing off of everything. And so I always just laugh about that. But it, kind of a full circle moment. I mean, he's a tremendous young man, unbelievable family, just good Christian people that, you know, have the right values and want the best for their kids. And they just happen to be exceptional athletes. And, yeah, he's had a tough journey in terms of the injury piece. And I think he's as healthy as he's ever been. And he's certainly got the talent to be an elite player in this league.
And it sounded like from his story that he was this close to saying, you know what, I'm done. So what'd you do? Yeah.
Well, when he came in and told me that, I said, hey, look, you know, I mean, B-Lou's kind of the guy coming back, but I think there's a pretty good chance that somebody's going to come after him and he may enter the portal. And if he does, you know, this is the step.
Yeah.
Are you good with that? And he's like, yeah, okay, let me, you know, but I got to want to kind of explore my options or whatever. So like literally 48 hours after that conversation, I called him. I said, hey, B-Lou's going to go to Memphis. So, you know, what do you want to do? And he said, let me sleep on it, and said he was back.
Pretty cool. Really cool. And you know, I hope he goes out there and excels, and he deserves it. You know, like you said, he's been through a lot with the injuries. How big is it for the program to get legacy guys? I mean, obviously Nate's dad excelled in the NFL. Now he's a big star on TV. Mm-hmm. Getting him that, I think that's significant. Making sure that you can, you know, get those familial ties and get him to go there.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we had another young man. I can't say his name because NCAA rules, which is kind of ridiculous, to be honest with you, who's committed to us, whose dad was a legacy as well. And I think one of the things that happens is they get to the program, they get to go through the recruiting process, and they sign off and they say, hey, I like what's going on here. Yeah. And, you know, I think Nate Sr. feels that way. And I think there's going to be some other players that as we go through this, you know, we want to bring them back that pride and tradition of the Wolfpack. And people that understand it, that helps.
What's been the biggest challenge, or what do you believe to be heading into camp? You know, we look at the preseason poll. I mean, and Steve and I yesterday, we're looking at it, we're saying, I mean, anybody in their right mind knows not to underestimate a team out of Reno. It's always going to be competitive. And you look at the poll, what for you is the biggest, or do you use that as a little bit of fuel? But for you as a head coach going in, camps opening up, are you going to find that it's going to be the biggest challenge?
Well, I mean, on Monday I had a team meeting and I said, hey guys, where are we going to be picked in the Mountain West polls? And of course they're all dead last, you know, so I'm like, yeah, so whatever, right? But I mean, I'm like, when you look at it in the media, what can the media go off of? Well, you look at what kind of returning production do they have? Well, our quarterback transferred to Memphis, our left tackle went to Oregon, our running back went to Sac State, we graduated our top two receivers, so we don't bring back any offensive production. So of course you're going to go, well, I mean, does that mean that we're going to play with six players on offense? No,
exactly.
Okay, we lost 9 of our 11 starters on defense. Well, we were one of the worst third down defenses in the country. That's called addition by subtraction. But we're not just going to play with two players on defense.
Exactly.
And so I understand what, you know, a lot of leagues have gotten away from this.
Yeah.
And there's probably some good reasons, but you know, hey, people are going to put out polls regardless. So, you know, I don't begrudge anybody for thinking less of us. I mean, like I told them a minute ago, I said, like, hey, that's not an indictment on our players. That's an indictment on me, evidently, as a head coach. They don't think I can coach very well.
Or the media that didn't do enough research.
Yeah. Man, we could put
I was going to say that too.
Yeah.
It's, I told everyone, you know, I cover UNLV. I'm the sideline reporter, and I was out there for 18 practices. I think I can put together a depth chart, but I really can't.
Right.
Right. They have 55 new guys.
Yeah, exactly.
I haven't seen 15 of them yet. So you guys are in the, yeah, I mean, it's like, I don't know
if I can put together a depth chart right now.
I mean, I think most programs, if you're bringing in 30 plus new guys, you know, the change makes it tough. The guys who are back from last year, in terms of the experience a year ago, you guys wound up going 3-10, but you had like 7 games or 6 games that were one score losses. What does that build? And I got to tell you, I admired you after games during the week, just the way you talked about how to deal with losses and how to build on that and close games.
Yeah, I do think that they're, you know, it's hard to take away positives when you get gutted, you know. But I do think that talking to my guys in the offseason, that was one of the things that came up. Like, coach, we're close, man. Like, stick to your guns. Do your thing. And we believe. And we got maybe rid of some guys that didn't. And we kept the guys that did. And then I think we attracted guys that are more like-minded to the guys that believe. And I think that's the whole thing to this in modern college football, man. I believe in the law of attraction. You better put out there what you want because that's what will come to you. And if you try to sugarcoat it or fluff it or whatever, you're going to have one of those dip years because you relied on the wrong guys.
What's the buy-in from the community? Funding obviously is a big deal at Reno or in Reno. It is a big deal here at UNLV. I mean, you got to get out there. You got to beat the drum. So how's it going?
Yeah, I think we've done a good job. We've got an initiative we call Our Town, Our Team. We get out and, you know, I mean, we're pounding the pavement. I'm taking donuts and coffee to, you know, job sites and dentist offices and, you know, whatever. Anybody that'll listen to me talk about Nevada football, go to the rodeo, go to the Aces game. We do a charity softball game with the first responders. I mean, we've tried to really engage with the community.
Here's the next one. I really admire the way you spoke at times about the conference chaos. And I thought you were using that as an example, like, hey, where Nevada is not right now being considered for the Pac-12. We need to be in that mix, but we're not because of funding in the past. I wanted to ask you, because I talk about this all the time down here. I think our public servants have done a really crappy job stepping up. Like, someone needs to be the guy who pushes or the woman who pushes the cause. We need more help at the state level for both of these universities. I think they do a really poor job.
Well, I'm not gonna step into that trap.
And I'm not trying to trap you, but I feel like, listen, Nevada is one of the states that's kind of outside the chosen group where, and I think it's Montana is one of them, New Mexico is one, and Idaho, like outside, whether it's FCS or FBS, they're at their group of five. And I think those states, including us, need to be more hyper-aggressive and kind of call on the carpet the unfairness of that and try to fix it. Yeah. On the state level.
Well, I think that it's about expectations, right? And you know, like anything else in the world, you whatever you emphasize, you're going to get. And what you make important is going to be successful. Whatever that degree of success is a lot of times based on the investment. And for us, that's a financial investment. I mean, unfortunately, Mackey is dilapidated right now. It's going to be hard to create the experience that people want to have now. When they buy a ticket, they're not just coming to watch the game. It's an experience that they're buying, right? And so, you know, having concourses and food options and things like that. Well, in UNLV's case, it kind of happened, right? You know, credit Brian Sandoval for negotiating that deal. And it's been a game changer, right, for Las Vegas and for the university. And so, you know, we'd love to have that happen. But, I mean, I don't know if it's the chicken or the egg. Something's got to give. And I know part of my job is to put a product out there that says, you know what, hey, we're putting 25,000 people in Mackey. You know, we need to do some improvements. All right, so let's get that done.
I'll also say, sorry, Willie, I'll also say, Jeff Choate's with us, that another thing that I've been beating the drum about, if UNLV is going somewhere, I absolutely think that Nevada should be included in conference talk. It doesn't mean, you know, stop UNLV from going, but I think there should be a pitch. Again, I think we need someone on a state level to make this pitch that both schools should be going together, because you guys already have a football history. You have a fan following. Mm-hmm. I think both schools would be really attractive for that jump if it were in the future, if the Pac-12 sends out more invites. Why not both schools?
Yeah, and Reno's, it's not like, you know, we're not, you know, I'm trying to think of something that won't offend anybody. I'm gonna throw Laramie out there. So, you know, I mean, like, you know, we're a growing, vibrant tech hub community. Like, this is not some backwater town. Like, this is a place where, you know, we can build a fan base and we can support a team that's playing at a high level if that choice is made. And I think that what you're really saying is that sometimes we got to work together, right? You know, yes. We can't just be the North and the South and the blue and the red and you know, the UNLV grad against the Nevada grad. It's, you know, even since that, when you go to the state house, sometimes like, all right, let's just get together and do what's best for these guys in Nevada.
Boy, I could rant and rave a lot. I don't want to get you in trouble, but, you know, as an example, Texas State, I'm like, I don't get it. This state has, you know, great universities and potentially great college football programs. Let's talk about the schedule a little bit, the non-con. What do you think about the non-con? A little more manageable this time around?
Yeah, it was pretty daunting last year, playing 13 games, opening up with a CFP opponent, going on the road to a Big Ten team, playing another bowl team. And so I think it's more manageable. Obviously the Penn State game is going to stand out to everybody on the schedule because there'll be a preseason one or two. But that's kind of an awesome opportunity to go to, you know, a college football shrine and be a part of a game day experience like that. And then the rest of the non-conference, I think, is a little bit more manageable for us.
Coach, appreciate it. Battle for the Cannon is closer than, you know, we'd ever imagined. The season goes by quickly. And hopefully at that point, maybe both schools, both programs have a bowl game already cinched.
That would be awesome.
That would be very cool. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks, Coach.
Appreciate you guys.
Jeff Choate.
head coach of the Wolfpack after a 3-10 season a year ago, but six losses by one score. Kind of feels familiar.
Yeah.
To the Arroyo era. Sure. Now here's the question. Is it Choate? Or was it circumstances, close games, and they are going to turn the corner? Because remember, if Arroyo had closed out a couple of close games here and there, I don't know if he would still be the coach, but actually could have gone to a bowl game in his last season, right? So close games are key, and I keep bringing it up to everyone, Barry Odom was really good in close games. You look back at last season, everyone's like, oh, you know, 11 wins. Yeah, you know how hard that was? How many close games they survived in? We'll continue to break down what's going on here around the Mountain West Conference. Up next, though, we got to go back to the Home Run Derby and the All-Star Game and talk rules, rules, rules. Does anyone know the rules?
Now back to Mountain West Conference Media Day with Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, Adam, you haven't been in all week or haven't been in all week. The Home Run Derby and then makeshift Home Run Derby, which one drove you more nuts?
It's a sore subject for me, Steve.
Oh, now, did you get screwed on a wager? This is even better.
Yeah.
You did.
Oh, yeah.
This is what I was screaming to yell about on Tuesday. I'm like, if they can't set up the rules and everyone doesn't know the rules, then we got to stop booking this. We have to stop booking the Home Run Derby.
I believe in the last 2 weeks I've made exactly one wager.
Stop. That was the only one?
I had $100 on Junior Caminero to win the Home Run Derby.
Amazing.
I was actually at, and it was, by the way, 11-1, not a, you know.
My whole point was on Rooker and the measuring of the home runs, and then he's like, I didn't know that.
Well, believe me,
he was like 8.5, 9-1.
By the way, that also screwed Caminero, who then had to face Rowley. And I mean,
Rowley's out.
At the time, I said he should be out. The favorite should be out of this, which also would have meant I could have just cashed out right there because the favorite's out, and then you know you could have got. It's ridiculous.
What do you think happened on the confusion on measuring the home run?
I don't think there was any confusion at all. I think the call from Commissioner Budd was, who's more marketable? Because he was pretty clear that that's what it's all about. You know, when they were making the decisions on who's in the game, hey, that's who people want to watch. Well, in the Home Run Derby, people were very interested in Cal Rally, so they said, okay, let's figure out a way to make sure that he's in this. And by the way, kid in the outfield, make sure you rob Junior Caminero of a home run. Just completely ridiculous. And by the way, if your response is, oh, it still counted, he lost by, you're an idiot. Because go back and watch it again. He had hit 5 in a row. He was completely locked in. And then he has to stop and go through this whole nonsense, and then he can't hit one for the next couple of pitches. So if you think it didn't matter, you're just dumb. It did matter.
Yeah, Rooker also explained he didn't know that you couldn't take pitches.
Yeah.
So he lost 2 pitches. How did they not know the rules? I'm not blaming it on the players. I'm blaming it on baseball. Because this is not the first time when the rules were wacky and were not applied or explained.
Well, this is not just words. Like, you know this is true. If I'm in, I'm – okay, what's this rule? What is this rule? What is this rule? What is this rule? And that's how I've always been about things.
I mean, it is $1 million first prize.
Yeah.
And for a guy like Caminero, it's more than he makes.
Yeah.
For the whole season.
Right. And – this doofus kid in the outfield.
That's the enemy of this whole thing.
He is, I mean, we talk about people running on the field. What, you said death penalty before. Have you not?
I have. Maybe I went overboard.
This is worse. We're letting you on the field, you moron kid. I don't even know how old he is. We're letting you on the field. Enjoy it.
Have fun. Shag a couple of flies. Don't go Ken Griffey Jr. up against the wall.
Go be a hero. It was, I still cannot believe that happened. I was at a work function.
Oh, no.
Everybody was sitting quietly having a normal conversation. I jumped out of a chair. It was in a restaurant. I jumped out of the chair and screamed, what the blank are you doing, you dumb kid? And people just looking at me like, what are you talking about? That's what I was talking about. I cannot believe that he did that. And that he was allowed to walk off the field with his legs not broken.
All right, how about the end of the game? The real game. The home run off where... Do you even know what the rules were?
I'm not even kidding. Couldn't watch it. Following it along on social media, so I know what they did. And by the way, how ridiculous. And I don't blame them. Ridiculous that if we're going to do this, that like guys like Ohtani are already home, leaving on the plane after like the third inning.
I mean, the story that was out today, they picked, I think earlier in the day or the day before, what would happen in a swing-off.
But they had to not include the stars because they knew they were going to be gone. If we're going to commit to the All-Star game, we're committing to nine innings and swings, I guess.
They don't know what they're doing.
It's
another marketing blunder by Bobby Baseball.
Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Mountain West Conference Media Day on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
We roll on Mountain West Conference Football Media Day in San Jose State. Not on the UNLV schedule this year, but could be at the very end. Ken Niumatalolo is sitting down with us. So, first of all, last year, congrats on the year, because when we talked to you in the preseason, we talked a lot about the mass exodus and the transfer portal. You recovered very nicely. When you look back on last year, what do you think?
Well, this time last year was chaos. You know, I just got hired in, you know, January 21st. So, like you said, just hiring a new staff, the exodus of players, being at a new place. I was at the Naval Academy 25 years, so I knew everything about the school. Then you go to school, I don't know anything. You know what I mean? So it was chaos, but I was grateful that we had some good players, the guys that stayed and the coaches helped. And so it's a lot different this year, but last year was chaos at this time of the season.
So I'm sure you were asked that last year at this time in terms of, I mean, your status of where you were at Navy. I mean, you know, with the Naval Academy, 25 years, I mean, it was legendary stuff, right? And then you come over. Now that you're going into the second season, does it feel, or is it a different feel for you? Did you have jitters last year with it? Now you don't. For a veteran like yourself, the stature that you have.
I don't know if jitters was the right word. I had some concerns because I just some unknowns, you know, because I had been at a place where I knew exactly, and I knew everything about the school. It feels way different this year. You know, it's not, if there's a problem, I know who to call to get it fixed or what we have to do or where we have to go. I just feel more at peace this year as best you can be. I mean, you start the season, I mean, you're always concerned how your team's going to look. But I feel way different than I did last year.
What'd you learn about the school? What'd you learn about the area that now helps in recruiting freshmen and portal players?
Well, I just know who we are. You know what I mean? We're not a Power 5, you know, 4 school with all this NIL or revenue sharing money. So we know exactly where to go to recruit or the type of kids we're looking for being in the league. And I kind of knew the conference. It was a tough conference. So good teams. I mean, UNLV, you know, Coach Barry, Coach Oldham did a really good job. I'd coached against him at Missouri when he was at Missouri when I was there. So I knew what type of coach he was. So I knew they'd be a tough team. So you just recognize that maybe the schools I hadn't played against, I knew what type of teams they were, what type of coaches, and just learned last year this is a tough conference.
What do you have in quarterback Walker Egan, and what's his next step in terms of growth?
Well, this time again, last year, we didn't know who our quarterback was. We didn't make our announcement until the week of the first game, and it wasn't him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He didn't come until halfway through the season. In our offense, like any offense, and not just his offense, but there's so much reading by the quarterback, pre-snap and post-snap reads, and I feel like he has a better grasp of that this year than he did last year, and that's going to help us because football is not a complicated game. Everything starts with the quarterback, and I think because of his growth, I think it's going to give us a chance, but, you know, we'll see.
What do you do on and off the field to replace the production and leadership of Nick Nash?
Great question. And also Justin Lockhart, you know, our ex-receiver. I mean, both of those guys caught over, you know, 1,300 yards and 1,000 yards of ball. Both of them are in the league. And so that's going to be tough production to replace. But we knew that going into it. So signed Leland Smith out of Purdue, Malachi Riley from Arizona, Danny Scudero from Sac State, Jahari Johnson and Kyrie Scholes, two junior college kids. Matt Coleman played in a bowl game for us, replaced Nick because Nick didn't play in the bowl game, caught 100 yards worth of balls, and Cooper Hoke is another guy coming back. Those are two hard guys to fill, but I feel like the overall production of our group, Mason Starling came from Cal, and so we feel like we went out, recognized that we had to replace them, and really because of those two guys, it was a little bit easier to recruit because we don't have NIL money. Yeah. Say, hey, we don't have money, but come here, catch a lot of balls, and we were able to get some power four receivers, and they're definitely going to help us.
Coach Ken, San Jose State, is with Cofield and Company. Did those guys set a tone in terms of leadership and work ethic? Because I know at UNLV, the receivers now, the ones that are still around, they look to Ricky White. They look to Jacob DeJesus, who's at Cal now. And they talk about how those guys set an example. I mean, having good players, if they're leaders off the field, that can spill over for another 3 or 4 years.
No doubt. And last year, this time again, also I was trying to implement our culture, the way we did things. It's not a knock on what Coach Brennan did, but just, you know, we just did things differently. And having guys come back from that, it definitely helps because they're doing things the way we want things done, the way Coach Stutzman, the way Coach Odom wants things done. And those guys have been able to take the ball and run with it in the offseason because they have player-run practices that our players run. And, you know, I'm at peace with that. I'm at peace with our leadership that they're going to do things the right way. And, you know, again, like I said, we'll see what happens.
You mentioned the lack of or lower NIL funding. And I'm assuming you build your program from the transfer portal, but also freshmen. I'm a parent of a five-star recruit, and you're coming into my living room. Why am I sending my son to come play for you?
Again, another great question. So we got our kids that we got. We got a kid from two cornerbacks, one from Washington and one from USC. And I told our guys, let's bring them to our practice. You know, because normally you go on official visits, you know, I don't know, if you're at UNLV, maybe you go eat a nice place here on a strip or something. At San Jose, we try to take them to a nice restaurant. That's not life. Bring them to practice, see how the coaches are. They can see how we are in our real life and, you know, this is really how you're going to be. And I remember asking those guys, both of those guys, after, why are you coming here? And both of them said it felt different here. And that's my thing. First, you know, if your son's a five-star, I want those guys to come to see us at practice because that's really going to be what you're going to get. You know, because everybody's on their best behavior when they come and visit your house or when you go on official visits. But I wanted guys to see us in our working environment because that's what you're going to get when you come here.
What's your biggest recollection from UNLV up there last year?
The rain.
Yes, exactly. I was out there on the field. Yeah, I was just like, I don't know how these guys are playing football. But wow. I'll tell you what, that was a real test of moxie and character to fight through the distraction of that. And it was annoying, man.
It was a really good game. Obviously, UNLV is a really good football team. It showed us, though, for us to get where we need to go. Obviously, we're a throwing team, but you have to be able to run the ball. And we couldn't run, you know, we couldn't throw the football. So our run game was lacking. So it helped us in this year because as we look at last year's game, that was a game like, you know what, we're in the Mountain West. We're going to see that type of weather again. You got to be able to run the football, you know, to have a chance. And again, it exposed us to a blemish that we had that we have to get rectified.
You don't play UNLV in the regular season. You could play them in the finale of the whole thing if you both have really good seasons. Do you have any idea what to expect from UNLV? Because as you said, Barry Odom did a really good job. They've got a good coach, a big name in Dan Mullen, but they've also got 55-plus new players. It's crazy trying to build these days, especially with a coaching change.
Yeah, I mean, Coach Holmes was a really good coach. Coach Mullen is a really good coach. You don't do what he did at Mississippi State. I mean, perennially in the SEC, they weren't a top-tier team, and he took them to bowl games and won those games. And you don't do what he did at Florida. You know, he was just at a school that is either national championship or bust, but he's a phenomenal football coach. They're not going to fall off at all. I mean, I'd see them continue to, you know, because Barry had them going up. I see them continue to go up that way because in the meeting, I was with Dan in many years in our AFCA meetings. He was one of the board of trustees, and he's a smart dude. And just being in a couple meetings I've been with him now, I mean, he's a really good football coach, and UNLV's not going anywhere. They're they're, like I said, they're going to just continue to progress.
Last one, Mountain West is going to splinter after this year. So, you know, there's obviously a lot of motivation just in season, also bragging rights as it gets splintered. What do you expect from the Mountain West? What do you think it's going to be years from now?
I don't know. It's interesting. I think the landscape of college football is going to continue to evolve. I mean, I don't think any of us know. I mean, from this year to last year, I mean, just how things have changed. I think it's going to continue to evolve. I think the key for all the programs, all the coaches, we got to be able to evolve and adapt with it. And I think the best coach that's been in our game of all time has been Nick Saban. And I think the greatest thing he did, he was able to adapt this scheme and adapt to the times. And I think all of us coaches and programs, we don't know what the landscape is, but we better be ready to shuffle our feet and be ready to keep moving.
And you still love it?
Love it. And this is my 17th year being a head coach, 36 year of coaching, but just as rejuvenated and ready to go. And I'm excited about this year.
All right, Coach, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you guys for having me.
That was important at the end to ask the question. You still love it. It sounds like a stupid question, but I actually feel like a lot of college football coaches don't love a lot of things about the job anymore. And a lot of the conversation at the end was about the morphing and adjusting, and he was paying a compliment. Ken Niumatalolo was paying a compliment to Nick Saban, who did, you know, evolve over the years. And by the way, I actually believe Greg McElroy, that story that came out earlier in the week, that there are people who think that Nick Saban is coming back. I think he is.
I don't.
He's only 73. 73 is the new 60.
Only. Pete Carroll's age.
There's going to be a lot of jobs open up. A lot of people willing to offer about $20 million a year.
I think Nick, he could turn things around quickly no matter where he went, if it was a struggling program wherever he went. But
yep.
I also think it takes at least a year or two to get going to where you want it to be. That's a lot of time.
LSU job?
I think he'll see. I think he might watch how Belichick does.
I'm trying to think. It was on earlier in the week, and they were mentioning that as a big key.
So, like,
it wasn't a guest. It was one of our hosts was saying Belichick, that he's going to watch what happens. I actually wouldn't watch. I don't think that's a great example.
Well, he might want a young girlfriend.
So that's his motivation to come back?
It should be.
What's his wife's name? Miss something? I mean, we know Miss Jordan's the biggest female personality now.
Sure. That's Miss Terry you're talking about.
Miss Terry. Okay, yeah, my bad. Terry. My bad. I should know Miss Terry because obviously I was kind of using the whole thing with Miss Jordan.
Sure.
Who, I don't know if you saw it, but Jordan Hudson, Belichick, had something to say about Bobby Kraft, saying that he took a risk by hiring Belichick, and there was a whole statement released.
Took a risk.
I'm like, when did Belichick ever release statements?
Well, he's got a PR person.
Exactly. Probably her. 364-1100, giveaway time, Vegas Nighthawk tickets against Tucson, two Saturdays from now, 6 o'clock kickoff, Leafs Family Forum in Hendo, Henderson, AXS.com, two tickets, caller 7, 364-1100, 364-1100. Next hour, I do want to address some of the things that Gloria Navarro said, the commissioner of the Mountain West Conference. Okay, you're the hardest judge of what she does, what she says. In general, what did you think of her messaging? Because she's got some interesting topics that she's, I'm not going to say required to break down, but she's at least got to give some sort of an answer.
I mean, her actual answers or the delivery? What are we looking at? I thought she did much better with her speech this year than last year.
Okay.
Question and answer session, maybe not the strong suit. But also, it's weird. Like, you don't know what you're going to get, and there's a lot of things. Like, it's not like you can prepare. Like, I know these two or three things are coming. There's a lot of things that have changed, a lot of things that can happen, and the entire thing was sabotaged by a non-story to start things off, which I think set everything on a bad path when it started.
Is it a requirement to be duplicitous or almost have like multiple personalities when you're a commissioner? In her case, I feel like she's attorney, grinder, doesn't really mess around, but hell on wheels away from cameras and microphones. Does she need to be sort of a fibber? And I mean, I like real people.
Yeah, me too. Like Coach Heck.
Well,
maybe he should be.
My God, the next hour, all on Jason Eck, the head coach of New Mexico. That's on the way. Stick around.